This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Thursday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. Congratulations to the St. Louis Blues. They win Game 7 last night in Boston 4-1. Here's the way it sounded on KMOX in St. Louis. Chris Kerber with the historic call.
A team that was in last place on January 3rd. The players on the bench are bouncing up. History will be made tonight in Boston. 15 seconds to go as Shen blocks a puck to the corner. 10 seconds remaining. Get up, St. Louis. Get on your feet. Raise them high. 5 seconds to go. And the time winds down. They did it. It's over. The game is over. The series is over. The wait is over. And the St. Louis Blues are the Stanley Cup champions for the first time in franchise history.
So congratulations to the Blues. Unbelievable that we're talking about a team that was in last place on January 3rd lifting the Stanley Cup. Now, there's a lot of things to unpack here. So let's start with the game itself, okay? Boston's home. The place is going nuts. But St. Louis has really thrived on the road. And I think the reason for that is they can play their game more. It's not as reliant on the power play. It's not as reliant on feeding off the crowd. They just know how to win on the road. They did it in Winnipeg. They did it in Dallas. They did it in San Jose. They did it 3 times here in Boston. So they were not going to blink with the 2 wins already in their back pocket in early in the series when they got the big Game 2 victory in overtime, and then the way they were able to win Game 5 in the fashion in which they did, maybe some controversy, but still, I think overall we're the better team. So going into Game 7, trying to win a third game in Boston, they were not going to blink. All right. Boston comes out, plays well early, and they're dominating. St. Louis had a little bit of a spurt early. Rask made a good save, but then Boston turns it on. Big save after big save by Binnington. But at 5:57 of the first period, Parenko throws one over the glass, and you're thinking, if you're a Blues fan, here we go. Boston best power play. It's been Achilles heel for the Blues all these playoffs. It's not even a call. It's not even a controversial one. It's not even a late hit, a hit to the head, a boarding penalty, a trip, a slash. It's a delay of game. But the Blues kill it off, and it was a huge play. And it looked like we were headed to a scoreless first period, which definitely would have been to the advantage of St. Louis. But then Ryan O'Reilly, who has just been so good in these playoffs, their leading scorer, he scores for the 6th consecutive game a point. He is the first player since Mark Messier to have a 6-game point streak in the final. All right, scores the first goal for the Blues for the 4th consecutive game at 16:47. So they're going to take a lead, you figure, by 1 goal going into the 2nd period. But then I thought a huge turning point, one of a couple of turning points in this game, Petrangelo gets his 3rd, and it comes with 8 seconds remaining in the 1st period. So Boston's the better team in the 1st period. They think for a while they're at least going to be in a scoreless tie going into the 2nd, get their bearings in the 1st intermission, get the pedal to the metal, get the Blues thinking, are they going to be able to crack the code of Rask and all that, and are they going to be able to figure out Binnington? And then a 2nd goal late in the period just had to be an absolute crusher. But you go into the 2nd period, Boston's come back before. All right, scoreless 2nd period, also huge, to not allow Boston to score going into the 3rd period. But you still felt Boston could still be heard from, right? They're going to score. They're going to have to score. They're going to have to figure out Binnington. They're going to make it a 2-1 game. All the pressure is going to be on St. Louis at that point. But then it stays 2-0, deeper and deeper and deeper into the 3rd period. Then finally, Shen gets a great feed from Tarasenko at 11:25. Pretty much puts it away, but it was the big, big save on Nordstrom earlier on in that sequence that kept it a 2-0 game. Shen makes it 3-0. Samford gets his first ever postseason goal. What a story he's been, right? I mean, here's a guy, wasn't playing, gets a chance to play because of the suspension of Sundqvist, plays so well, he gets bumped up to the 2nd line, plays on the 1st line at times, and he gets a huge, huge goal, the feed from Perron. Perron's also a great story. His 3rd stint with the St. Louis Blues. O'Reilly gets another point, makes it 4-0, and then Grizzlick scores his first game back from the concussion to make it 4-1, but it was at 17:50. So all it did was diminish a possible shutout from Binnington, and St. Louis is able to go away and party, pretty much, the entire last few minutes of the game and just know that they're going to win their first Stanley Cup in franchise history. Binnington, again, 32 saves, some of them just tremendous. You could have gave him the Conn Smythe Trophy for sure. I think maybe the reason you don't, he had a few stinkers in the playoffs, but he always bounced back. 8 wins coming off of losses for Binnington and the St. Louis Blues. But I thought O'Reilly was a great choice, scoring the first goal again, scoring the first goal late in that first period, which was huge. So he ends up getting it. And just so many different storylines. We'll start with O'Reilly. Here's a guy in Colorado on a lousy team, in Buffalo with a lousy team, finally gets traded to the St. Louis Blues, and he's on the Blues. They're struggling, can't get any goaltending. He's having a great year, 77 points, his best season in the National Hockey League. But early on, he's thinking, I'm getting traded to a team that's underachieving. Meanwhile, if you remember, Buffalo early in the year had won 10 in a row. So Riley's probably thinking to himself, my God, can I catch a break here? But then he's a part of what the second half ended up being for the Blues. He ends up winning the Conn Smythe Trophy. What a story there. What a trade, too. What an important person in many different important players for the St. Louis Blues. So you have that story. You have the Jordan Binnington story, which really coincides with him getting called up. He's a Boston Bruin castoff. He's a minor leaguer. They throw him into the mix on January 7th, makes his National Hockey League debut on a lousy hockey team, and he ends up being really the straw that stirs the drink, although not right away. I mentioned it on this podcast many times before, talking to Darren Pang when the Blues were in Madison Square Garden late in the year, and I said, I guess Binnington's the guy, right? He must have really turned it around. And he said, no, I think more times than not, these skaters are carrying Binnington, allowing him to get his game going, and certainly he became a major factor, but we credit the Blues for kind of carrying him early and giving him a little bit of a soft landing to get his bearings and then become the player that he ended up becoming. Could have very easily won the Conn Smythe Trophy. They do not win the Stanley Cup without him. There's no question about that. Goaltending had always been the problem for the St. Louis Blues. And then it brings it back to Craig Berube, somebody that Darren Pang told me was the major reason. But early on, it wasn't a move that worked. Yo gets fired. In comes Berube in November, but the team doesn't seem to gain any traction. But then this story comes out that a lot of the players just didn't understand Craig Berube's way, didn't know who he was. Vladimir Tarasenko was in Russia. He never saw Berube play. So the assistant coaches put together video of all the fights that Craig Berube had gotten into in his National Hockey League career and all that he had accomplished in the NHL, trying to let the players know this guy is honest. This guy's got credibility. He would never ask you to do something he wouldn't go out there and do himself. And that won all of the players. It took a little while, but it won all those players over so they were able to connect with their new head coach, and who I think is going to be a long-term head coach with the St. Louis Blues, and put it together. So that was a major turning point for this franchise. It took some time, but patience was the virtue, both in goal and in the coaching change, two major factors why this team was able to win. Let's not forget about two very important people that it's easy to forget about. Dave Taylor, his contributions to this team. The former Los Angeles King putting his fingerprints on building this team. How about Larry Robinson? Talk about a forgotten figure. There is a consultant for the defenseman, a guy that won a cup as a player, won a cup as a head coach, and now really helping that blue line come together, and a major reason why the St. Louis Blues were able to bounce back and win games and really bring in guys like Pietrangelo together, Parenko back together again, Bouwmeester, who had never played for a chance to win a Stanley Cup, almost the 1,300 games in his National Hockey League career, finally gets to lift the Stanley Cup. Larry Robinson deserves a lot of credit there. Now we go back to being the worst team in the National Hockey League on January 3rd. All right. That is a bit of a misnomer, because you could say what you want about the regular season being meaningless because a team can be the worst team in the league on January 3rd and win the cup. But let's not forget, going back to the O'Reilly deal with Buffalo was made because the Blues believed that they could be a cup contender. Their Achilles heel all season long and really all decade long has been able to find that goaltender. And when they finally found it in Binnington, it came together. So it's a little bit different than your average team that is bad and then they make the playoffs. This was supposed to be a cup team that just needed the right ingredient, and Binnington ended up being the right ingredient. Also, They didn't go from the worst team in the National Hockey League to barely making the playoffs. This team made a significant enough run to me to really show how amazing the turnaround was in what I believe is the best division in the National Hockey League, the Central. Well, you've got teams like Minnesota and Chicago who missed the playoffs, but teams that made the playoffs like Colorado, like Dallas, Nashville and Winnipeg, two of the best teams in the NHL going into these playoffs, they were able to contend with those teams in that division in that tough schedule to be able to go from the worst team in the league all the way up to actually on the last day of the regular season having possession of first place. The Blues had a day game the last day of the season. They won that game and resided in first place in the best division in the league going into the night games. Nashville and Winnipeg won their games as well, and then you saw Nashville win the division, Winnipeg finish in second place, but St. Louis made that turnaround from worst to first on the last day of the season and then beat Winnipeg with great come from behind victories, beat Dallas in a really hard fought series, beat San Jose, pummel San Jose into the ground when many people believe they were the best team in the league, and then kind of an afterthought going against the big bad Boston Bruins, who were looked upon as the second best team in the league next to the Tampa Bay Lightning. But since Tampa didn't even win a game in the playoffs, the Bruins became the team to beat, certainly in the Eastern Conference, if not all of the National Hockey League. And despite being down 2-1 to Columbus, ended up going roughshod the rest of the way, winning the rest of the games against the Blue Jackets, sweeping the Hurricanes. So they went into this Stanley Cup final like a house on fire, with one of the top lines of the National Hockey League, with Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasternak, with Tuukka Rask playing out of his head, with a blue line that had been very effective throughout the year, the Hall of Famer Chara, McAvoy playing great, Carlo playing great, and they lose to the St. Louis Blues. So this story is just an incredible one, and we've had a lot of questions about sustainability for the Blues moving forward, which is something that's really kind of unfair to talk about when you consider the fact that they just won the Cup. But if Binnington's for real, and he's not like a Cam Ward, or he's not kind of a flash in the pan like John Carey, if he is going to be a really good goaltender in this league, then I think the St. Louis Blues are a team to contend with. Tough division, so I think Chicago's on the come. Colorado might be one of the best teams of the National Hockey League. Dallas doesn't look like it's going anywhere. Winnipeg and Nashville, all the teams they have to contend with in the Central Division, but the St. Louis Blues are the only team among those that could say that they've won the Stanley Cup in 2019 and are the defending Stanley Cup champions. Ratings, tremendous, 6.2, nearly 7 million people in the United States watched that game seven. A terrific, terrific showing for the National Hockey League for sure. So all the controversy, all the garbage that we went through, I think the right team won the championship, because you could talk about how the Bruins were jobbed in game five and how maybe they should have had the 3-2 lead going into game six. But they had a game seven in their building and they got blown out. And they got blown out because they could not figure out Jordan Binnington, and that was a major story in this game. But the Bruins should hang their head pretty high, too. Had a terrific playoff run, for sure. Even if Zdeno Chara were to decide to retire, they're still very deep on the blue line. Pasternak has emerged as a clear superstar in this league. DeBrusk has a huge future as a player in this league. Marchand, Bergeron aren't going anywhere either. I think they're exceptionally well coached in Bruce Cassidy. So the Boston Bruins got to contend with a Tampa team that's going to be back next year. And I think, and clearly, Vegas has already shown the odds, a 5-1 favorite to win the Stanley Cup, which are the best odds of any team in the National Hockey League, but you got to feel pretty good about their future as well. So what a great year for the National Hockey League. Upsets, turmoil, controversy, but some tremendous individual efforts and a great seven-game series, our first seven-game series since 2011, and just an incredible, incredible night in St. Louis. So congratulations to those fans. Enjoy it. You never know if it's going to happen again, but of the other six, you had the original six and the other six that came in the 67-68 season, and putting the California Golden Seals aside, because they obviously folded before they were able to accomplish accomplish anything. The other five teams, the Blues were the one team that hadn't won the cup yet. Philadelphia won their two cups in the mid-70s, and eventually the North Stars became the Dallas Stars and won their cup in 1999. The Los Angeles Kings backed their first championship in 2012 by going out 2 years later and winning their second Stanley Cup championship. The Pittsburgh Penguins have been the most dominant of all of the other six franchises that came in 67 and 68. And now the St. Louis Blues can finally call themselves a Stanley Cup champion. A great game, great effort, and just a lot of fun to be able to cover it and talk about it with you here on Game Misconduct. All right, let's hear from you at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. I'm sure there's a lot of people that want to chime in about that game and just about what was an incredible season. Mario says, hey, Don, hope you are having a good day. The Blues are victorious. Would you say that this Game 7 was very similar to the one in Vancouver 8 years ago? I would say it definitely was. Of course, Boston winning that game on the road 4-0 as opposed to 4-1. But again, they were just 2 minutes and 10 seconds away from getting that exact same score. It's tough. You go seven games and you got the home ice advantage, but you know, we had Kevin Shattenkirk on the Michael Kay Show yesterday, and I just asked him, why is it that teams have success in the postseason on the road as opposed to other sports? And he just said it's just a different vibe. You get to stick to hockey. Right? I mean, you're more regimented on the road than you are when you're home. When you're home, you're dealing with your kids, you're dealing with your family, but people are bugging you for tickets and, you know, everything changes on the road. You're at the hotel, you're with the team, everybody's together, you have your meal beforehand, all together. You go in, you don't have to worry about the fans, jumping, your own fans jumping you. That's one thing that I think was a great advantage to the Blues. Is that failing on a power play, they knew that they weren't disappointing their crowd. You want to hear boos, because that means you're doing well when you're on the road. So they were, I think, able to feed off the road crowd, and they reminded me a lot of the Devils of 95 that won all those games on the road. St. Louis really became just road warriors throughout these playoffs. That's a major reason they won, but a good job by Mario. Last time we had a Game 7, similar result, road team winning, going away. And as a matter of fact, the last three Game 7s, 2009, 2011, and then last night, the road team has won Game 7. So clearly, home ice advantage, which we always thought meant having that advantage in a possible Game 7. That's what John Tortorella used to talk about, is that home ice doesn't mean anything until you get to a Game 7. Well, there's three Stanley Cup Final Game 7s in a row that the road team won. Tony says, I'm proud of my fellow hockey fans, highest rated game in 25 years. Great night for the sport. People came together. It's a Game 7. There were great storylines here. I think it helped a little bit that New York, no Mets, no Yankees, that's the number one market in the country. Maybe a lot of people in New York were able to drive up the rating, but really, for a sport that does get beat up a lot for just not being that great of a television sport, that was a tremendous night last night. David says, now that St. Louis finally has the cup, which franchise that has never won it has the best chance to become the next Blues? Vancouver, Buffalo, Florida, Arizona, Minnesota, Columbus, Ottawa, Winnipeg, Nashville, San Jose, or Vegas. Those are the teams. Well, Vancouver's kind of in a rebuild. So is Buffalo. Florida, I think, will be a quick one with Joel Quenneville. They've got a lot of talent there for sure. Arizona, there's talent. They almost made the playoffs last year. I think Minnesota's on a bit of a down cycle. Ottawa's got a few years left to go. So I think it kind of comes down to Columbus, Nashville, San Jose, and Vegas. Those are the four teams. And I would say the team that's got the best chance right now when you look at it, we'll see what happens with the Winnipeg Jets with Kevin Hayes is not coming back, obviously. I think Winnipeg is still very much in the conversation. Columbus, it's hard to really say they're in the conversation when you don't know what's going to happen with Bobrovsky and Panarin. So Nashville's still very good. San Jose, they're likely going to lose Carlson. Joe Thornton may retire. They're getting a little long in the tooth there. So Vegas, Nashville, Winnipeg, between those three, I would say Winnipeg maybe has the best chance, but I think those are the three teams you narrow it down to of the list, David, that you gave there. Forever THS, thank you for all of the content and a great season on the podcast. Definitely one of my favorites. Also, where would you rank Binnington's performance in Game 7 in all-time lists of clutch goalie games? Well, there's a plenty of them for sure. That's got to rank right up there. because some of those shots of the 33 that he faced were very, very high quality. I know Cam Ward as a rookie, tremendous job in 2006. I remember what a great game seven that he had at home. You go back to what Mike Richter was able to accomplish in game seven against Vancouver. And also stopping the penalty shot, if you remember earlier in that series. But you talk about game sevens. Brodeur, I thought, played great, even though he was outshined in 2003 by J.S. Giguere, who won the Conn Smythe. I thought Brodeur was so clutch in that game seven. There's a lot of ones that rank up there, but considering where Binnington was before January 7th, I'm sure if you were able to tell him on January 7th, making his NHL debut, not even getting a rookie camp with the St. Louis Blues, that, hey, by the way, we're going to fast forward 6 months from now. You're going to be playing in a game seven and becoming the star of a game and helping the Blues win a Stanley Cup. Nobody would have believed that. So if you wanted to rank it number one, I think that would be huge. You go back to Ken Dryden back in 71. That would be clutch for sure as a rookie. So there's quite a few of them that kind of hop to mind. Pucks and Pugs, haven't heard from him in a while. What a game. Feel sorry for Chara, beyond happy for the Blues. St. Louis and Layla, can't wait for next season. And a great job by you bringing up Layla. Layla, of course, the 11-year-old girl who's got the tough disease that she's going through, and she was finally cleared to go to games in St. Louis. I think it was in the San Jose series. And she was cleared to travel to Boston for last night. Parenko kind of took her under his wing. She was on the ice getting a chance to lift the cup after the game. So what a tremendous story that was, for sure. And I think a great job by NBC really following that story, because I think that was definitely something that tugged at the heartstrings for sure. Nick says, hey, Don, I know this isn't the last game misconduct, but still wanted to thank you for another great season. It's great to listen to someone so passionate about hockey. Keep up the good work. Well, I appreciate that. It's going to be kind of catcher's catch can until we get to next season. We're going to have another podcast on Monday, bring EJ back into the fold, get his thoughts on everything that happened during the Stanley Cup final run. And, of course, we'll get you ready for the draft next week. We'll do a show leading into the draft next Friday. And then after that, it'll kind of just be who signs after July 1st. So it's certainly not going to be the last one, but it's going to be the last one as consistent. So thank you so much for the kind words. Tom, also a major follower to Game Misconduct, said, what a season. Congrats to the Blues. Layla Anderson's story melted my heart. However, I do expect the Hawks to rebound in the Central in 2019-2020. Got any way to early predictions for next season? See you at the Beach Bash. That's nice. Tom's coming to the Beach Bash. I think Chicago is going to be better. For sure. Wouldn't be surprised if Winnipeg and Nashville take a little bit of a step. That's a very difficult division. Colorado, I would probably pick them as the team to beat in the Central Division, despite the fact that the Blues won the Stanley Cup. I think Colorado is certainly on the come. They got the fourth overall pick as well. So I like Colorado in the West here early, and in the East, I think Boston's going to be back. I think Tampa's going to regroup, and they're going to be back as well. I think Florida's going to be a playoff team with Joel Quenneville in the fold. Still have major free agents to go through with the Islanders. Devils in a rebuild, Rangers in the rebuild. So to me, I look at the Atlantic Division and I say Colorado's on the come, but Pittsburgh is still there. Washington's still a very good team, but I still think Tampa would be my favorite in the East, and look out for Colorado in the West. Christina wanted to congratulate the Blues on finally getting their cup. A special congratulations to Dave Taylor for getting his first cup as well. He played for the Kings, then was with the organization, has been working with the Blues for years. Awesome. And that's what we did at the beginning of the show for sure. There's a lot of people that are behind the scenes with that St. Louis Blues team that deserve a tremendous amount of credit. Zach wants to congratulate the Blues this offseason. Can we get some interviews since we won't have any games to recap? Always great to be part of my day. Well, thank you, Zach. And we'll get some stuff going during the course of the summer too, and try to get some guests. I think I've explained it to you before that when I tape this, and in relation to my travel to the studios and of course also preparing for the Michael Kay Show, sometimes it's tough to narrow down a guest when there's such a small window in which I do the podcast. But we will have other guys besides EJ. We had Dan Rosen on yesterday. Craig Button, we're going to have him on for the draft. But I would like to do more stories during the course of the summer and some sit-downs with some players. So definitely make more of an effort to try to get some guests for you for sure. Robert Thee says, do you think the ref's failure to call any penalties other than the automatic delay of game hurt the Bruins. I think it helped the Blues more than it hurt the Bruins. We've talked about it a lot, Robert, throughout the Stanley Cup final, that the Blues benefit from lack of calls. They can play more physical. They can stay more in their game. Plus, with how poor their special teams have been, it was probably a good idea for them to stay out of the box. And they, I wouldn't say they swallowed the whistles. I really give credit to the players for not committing too many fouls in the game and making it tough on the officials to make calls. But the fact that there were not that many whistles and not that many penalties, I certainly do believe benefited the St. Louis Blues more than the Boston Bruins. Shep says, hey, Don, which play was bigger, the 2-0 goal late in the first or the pad save before the 3-0 goal? Thanks, and thanks for another stellar season of game misconduct. It's a great question because, you know, giving up a goal late is just so debilitating, right? And it's a different game at 1-0 going to the first intermission as opposed to 2-0. But 2-0 with 40 minutes left to play is still very much doable for Boston. But now you're in the third period, and that save, if Nordstrom scores that goal, it's 2-1. It's a completely different game. So if I had to give the turning point of the game, it probably would be the pad save before the 3-0 goal. Chris says, hey, Don, congratulations to the Blues. It was reported the Flyers meeting with Hayes went well, but they're not his first choice. What's the likelihood this report came from his agent to leverage more money? Also, thoughts on Rutherford saying Kessel will stay. I think the Kessel stuff is just kind of general manager speak. Everybody that I talk to, it looks like he's definitely gone, so we'll see what happens there. And clearly it's leverage. I mean, he wants to stay on the East Coast, so certainly the Flyers are in the conversation for him to stay, but he is going to try to use it as leverage for sure. Now, leverage to either get more money out of the Flyers, or that kind of guarantees you that the Flyers wasted the trade because he's still going to test free agency on July 1st, which I thought he was going to do all along. Joseph said, in two sentences, where do you see the Blues and the Bruins next year? Who has an easier path ahead of them versus harder? Well, there's a couple of schools of thought here, and unfortunately, I have to give you more than two sentences because there's a lot to unpack here. You can say that the Atlantic is easier than the Central, and I would say that because I think there's a lot more better teams than the Central. You look at the Atlantic Division, Detroit's in rebuild, Ottawa's in rebuild, Buffalo's in rebuild, but you got the Tampa Bay Lightning to overcome. But you don't, and because of a first and second finish, you know, you're really looking having to play Tampa in the second round. So I think Boston's trip might be a lot harder just because I really do respect Tampa Bay as an obstacle. But if Tampa Bay's going to lose in the first round again, then it'd be a heck of a lot easier for Boston than it would be for St. Louis coming out of their division. However, are you going to bank on the Lightning getting bounced in the first round 2 years in a row? I love both teams. I think both teams are deep. I think if Binnington is a legit goaltender, I think both teams are going to be very good moving forward. But as far as the easier path, Tampa kind of plays into that for sure. Jeff says, really debunks the notion of needing a team full of superstars to win a cup. That's a great point, Jeff. You do have some guys that I think starred. I mean, Tarasenko, I think, is a very good player. O'Reilly is a very good player. Petrangelo is a very good player. But right, is there anybody on the St. Louis Blues that it's the level of a Crosby or an Ovechkin? I think in all sports, I mean, the NBA maybe aside, because the NBA only has an 8 or 9 man rotation and superstars are very much needed in that sport. I'd rather be very good everywhere than just top heavy. And certainly neither of these teams you can consider top heavy. Look how well both of their fourth lines played throughout the playoffs. So I'm kind of with you. I think you got to really take a good look at having depth on your team rather than having that one big superstar player. James White sent some tweets, pictures with him and I guess his girlfriend and wife with EJ Raddick. So always good to hang out with EJ Raddick in Boston. Good for him. Chris wants to congratulate Petrangelo. The Petrangelo goal is better than the Orr goal. That was a good comment from him. Let's see. Let's get a couple more here before we say goodbye. Tim says, with the Blues winning their first Stanley Cup, which franchise is next in line to win their first cup in their history or break the cup drought? Well, now that you brought up Cup drought, I think Toronto's very much in the conversation, too. We'll see if they hold on to Mitch Marner and what happens if they let him go. But Toronto could be in the mix. They haven't won since 1967. But as I mentioned before, Winnipeg, Nashville, Vegas would be on the top of my list of teams to finally break the curse or win their first Stanley Cups. All right, gave you the lay of the land. We're going to be back with you again on Monday. We'll have E.J. Raddick on his regular Monday spot, recap the Stanley Cup final playoffs, get a bit of a draft preview, because the draft's coming, man. It's coming in a week. As I said, we'll do some pre-draft stuff with Craig Button. We did it last year. It was very successful, so we'll do it again. And then we'll kind of give you the lay of the land for the summer. Of course, right after the draft, July 1st is going to be the big circle date to see where all these players go. And if history dictates, usually these players within a 24-hour period, the big ones anyway, get gobbled right up. So by January 2nd, 3rd, before we get to the 4th of July, I think all of the real pertinent players are already being inked up. So we'll definitely give you the lay of the land once we get past the draft. So back with you again on Monday. Congratulations to the St. Louis Blues, not only on winning the Stanley Cup, but a thrilling playoff ride. Congratulations to the National Hockey League and to all the hockey fans, too, because it was a great year, a lot of fun, and it was great talking to you guys as well. So we'll be back with you again on Monday. This was the Thursday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast on the ESPN app, Google Play Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.